IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Well, hello and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We're happy to be with you today.
We are. We're in downtown Salt Lake City. We're looking out at a beautiful morning. Autumn is in the air. Linda's 15 days out from her total knee replacement. 15 days, honey.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad to be that far away from it.
You're a star.
Oh, man, we had the best. I had the best care. I'm so grateful for good doctors who know what to do.
Wait, I thought you were talking about me.
And then also I have the greatest caretaker in the world, right, sitting right by me here. Oh, my goodness. Breakfast in bed every morning.
I'm a nurse, I tell you.
He is so good and force feeding me vitamins and good food, which we're going to be talking about today.
Well, and it fits right into, you know, second half of life is a time when you have a lot of things happening to you. And you also try to create a lot of good things. And by the way, Linda, a lot of people, you know how when you get a new car and suddenly everyone, you see so many of cars that are just like the one you bought, you never noticed them before, or an old car, whatever you get, whenever you have a different car, you start noticing, oh, there's a lot of these cars on the road. And that's how it is with this. We're talking so much about the second half of life. And we notice a lot of people are talking a lot about it. One of our favorite authors, Richard Rohr, the Catholic theologian who is so brilliant on so many levels, and his book that's been out for a while called Falling Upward, interesting title, is really about the two halves of life. And you said this morning, Linda, maybe we're losing some of our audience on IRS on the Road.
Well, I just don't know how many people are as interested in the second half of life as we are, but it's no, actually it's part of the program. But it is fun to think about. Gosh, sometimes you just have to laser focus on what's ahead of you, and it's just really a good practice.
Well, and the second half of life is long. I mean, you know, if numerically speaking, if you're 40. You've probably entered the second half of life, or you're getting very close to it. Well, if the average lifespan's 80, so that's
I don't think our 40-year-olds are thinking much about that.
In their second half. But even if you're not in the second half of life, something you ought to be very interested in, especially if you have parents in the second half of life that you want to communicate better with. So I think IRS on the Road is still universal, but we really do feel like there's a powerful, well, I mean, the fastest growing demographic in the country is people are living longer and longer, right? And we want to make our lives full, and we want to make the second and third quarter, the fourth quarter, whatever, using the sports metaphor, that's when the game's really decided.
It is, and it's interesting because you never know what's going to happen to you. It's kind of exciting. Because you never know what's going to fail next. And then you have to take care of that. But dealing with those kind of adversities is good for you. I mean, we've done it our whole lives with our kids and with our business and with our lives, with our writing and so on. There's always hurdles to get over. But this is really the time of life when you can think about what can I do to maximize my life going forward.
Well, and I'm going to say this, honey. I think what we believe is that there's first half thinking and second half thinking. And first half thinking is more about accumulating and growing and getting better and getting bigger and having more stuff and all that. And that's all part of life. But the sooner we move to second half thinking, which is about relationships instead of achievements, it's about slowing down and enjoying the journey rather than rushing around all the time. The sooner in life we make the transition to a more mature sort of second half type of thinking, the better off we are. And that's why we're devoting IRS on the Road largely now to how to live this second half of life. And we as many of you know who listen regularly, We've defined seven facets: how to live physically, how to live mentally, how to live socially, and so on in the second half. And we're right at the beginning of how to live the second half of life physically. And again, if you're fairly young and you kind of resist saying that you're in the second half of life, this is still important for you, because the sooner we move into these better habits, better paradigms, better sort of approaches to life that come in the second half, the sooner we move into those, the better off we are. And so in this physical section, and during the month of September, talking about how to take care of our bodies in a way that makes them last, and how to really master the basic principles of diet and exercise and having the right medical care and all the things that can. And a lot of people said, well, why do you have that one first? You guys are all about family. Why don't you have the unit on families first, or the one on living life spiritually first? The answer is pretty simple. If you, how well you live the second half of life physically will determine how long the second half is and how
Right.
much time you have to work on all the other facets.
So why don't you give the listeners a little overview of September, because we are talking a lot this week, and it's only the 5th of September, but as we record this, but we're talking a lot about food and nutrition and so on. Can you give them a little overview of what's going to happen for
You bet. You
September?
bet. It's really simple in September, because there's 4 weeks, and we're gonna spend the first week on what we're doing today and what we've been doing, how the diet aspect of it, the eating aspect, the nutrition aspect. Second week, we're gonna shift to exercise, which is obviously important, and we have some very unique ideas on that. The third week is gonna be medical care and how to be sure we're getting the kind of checkups and tests and so on that avoid big bad surprises, how to really take charge of your own medical care. And the fourth week, we're going to talk about places where we spend our time and where we feel the best, and how we can put all four of those things together to make it great. And last week on ours on the road, if you missed it, you may want to go back and catch up on it, because we're talking about this diet that we've been working on now for a decade that really is about quantity control. It's really about just, it's called the eat half diet, or the half diet diet. And the thesis behind it just fascinates me. And I think we've both benefited a lot from it, honey, that as you are disciplined enough to reduce the amount of the quantity of food you put in your body, your appetite, instead of wanting more, will start to want better. Once your appetite realizes you're only getting this half quantity, it will start behaving itself. And so, in other words, here's another way to say it.
In fact, it isn't about you doing anything for your body. It's about what your body will do for you as a reward for the effort you make to eat half as much. As you continue to cut your intake in half, you'll essentially be training and developing a more selective appetite.
And that has really happened to us over the last several years, as we have just governed how much we put in our body. Eating half, we always order one entree if we're eating out, and we share it. We cut our meals in half. We just, and the discipline it takes sometimes is hard. But if you do that, it is true that your appetite, which the job of your appetite is to get enough nutrients into your body for you to function. And if your appetite realizes, we're talking about it as though it's a person, but if your appetite realizes, hey, I'm only getting this amount, I'm not going to get any more, it's not going to do me any good to keep asking for more, eat more, eat more, I better start getting better quality.
Right.
So what happens, and we both are testaments to this, and a lot of other people are too. There's thousands of people who've done this diet, and the bottom line is junk food starts to look like junk to you. And good
Yeah.
quality nutritional food looks good. It looks better and better. You want it more and more because your appetite becomes your friend as you train it. That's why we call it bridling. It's like bridling a horse.
And actually, when we do eat out, we sometimes have both of us have a meal, but we take half of it home. So we have half of our breakfast in the refrigerator to eat this morning. If you don't believe in leftovers, and I know some people don't, that doesn't work. But it really is interesting to just cut down on what you're eating. And it's amazing if you can control your appetite and just say, nope, enough, this is enough. Then it's great.
So listen to this.
It's so interesting to sit in a restaurant or an airport or a fast food place and watch people eat. I always watch to see who is winning, the person or the appetite. Usually the appetite is winning. When the appetite is winning, people eat quickly. Their fork is loaded up for the next bite the second they get the previous bite in their mouth. Their eyes are darting around from plate to fork and over the bread and then to their drink, like they're protecting their food as they gulp and guzzle it down. Oh my goodness. I haven't read that for a while. Even in very nice restaurants, you see a lot of appetites winning. The bites are big and too rapid in succession. It's a conscious thing the person may be carrying on a conversation and using good table manners, but if you look closely, the appetite is winning. It's so refreshing when you see someone who's winning over the appetite, who is bridling, who is reining in the horse, and thus enjoying it more.
I like to watch someone taking his or her time, smelling and savoring the food, arranging it, a small bite on the fork, then setting the fork down between bites and chewing slowly. These people have a much calmer demeanor.
You know, I think that you do a lot better at that than I do because I really think of eating as refueling because I've got so much to do when I get
Well,
through.
you're not so much. You're
But I am eating less, but I am not putting my fork down in between times. I
well, I
need to do
am.
better at that. I know you are. That's why I'm saying you're the master of this. It's amazing.
What's the difference when we're in Europe? Remember that time we were sitting in that sidewalk cafe noticing
Yeah.
how Europeans eat, particularly the French?
It was actually in Poland.
That was in Poland, yeah.
But we were in Poland on the main square where the Pope appeared during World War II toward the end of it and was the savior of so many people. And honestly, we were sitting with our friends who are Polish who invited us there. And they said, look out on this plaza, look out there. Can you see anybody that's overweight? And we would look, took a second look and went, no, we can't see anyone who's overweight. I'm afraid if you did that in the US on a plaza where food was the main thing that was going on, I think you would not find that.
Well, what was interesting about that day is we had always said, well, the reason people in large cities and especially European cities are trim is they walk all the time. They walk everywhere. They get so much
Yeah.
exercise. They don't get in their car to go somewhere. They walk. But we started realizing that day that's not the whole story at all, because that was the day I remember first really watching people eat and how slowly they eat and how much they savor and enjoy their food and how it is really an enjoyment process. And that slow eating, it's the idea. So if you put it in a mathematical formula, if you eat twice as slow, then you consume only half of the food in the same amount of time. And it's that quantity control that we think makes such a big, huge difference. And the other thing, Linda, is water. You said last time on the show that if you want a simple maxim, Americans in general eat way too much food and drink way too little water. We're kind
Or
of
liquids of any kind,
we're
yeah.
chronically
Dehydrated.
dehydrated. And so think about this right here.
One other thing water can do for you is combat impulse eating. Retailers thrive on impulse purchasing. Shoppers who can't resist bargain price items carefully placed where the eye glances and the hand can reach. Most of us like impulse purchasers shopping. When we walk past food or notice food lying somewhere on the counter or in the drawer or on the shelf, we grab it and slap it in our mouths. Just a little, of course, but it adds up. Some call it grazing because it's a lot like what horses do, just nibbling all the time. There's food all around us in our homes so that we can bite here and bite there, not even counting the full-fledged snacks. The problem with impulse purchasing or impulse eating is that it lets your appetite win, just in little pieces, but those small bites combine and multiply and appetite wins while you lose and gain.
Well, you lose and gain. So we're going to take a little break and we're going to come back and talk a little more about some of the simple ideas that can cause us to eat slower and eat less and eat better.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back, talking about fasting and slowing.
Yeah, let's talk a little about fasting, Linda, because it is pretty interesting as a subject that fits in with this whole nutrition and eating thing.
For centuries, millennia, forever, fasting has been associated with mental and spiritual clarity and with a cleansing and purging of the physical body. It can also help with the development of discipline that will make the half diet really work.
As hard as it may be, or excuse me, as hard as it is to divide the food on your plate and eat only half of it, it's even harder, maybe twice as hard, to eat none of it at all. Periodic fasting recalibrates your appetite, your sense of self-control, and even the size of your stomach.
Wow, yeah. In order to formulate my specific fasting challenge, let me define the terms and the timetable. For our purposes here, let's define fasting as going completely without food or drink, except water, for 24 hours, essentially missing two meals and going from dinner on one day to the dinner on the next day without eating anything in between.
Fasting once a month for 24 hours is a fairly widespread practice. In our church, in the LDS church, we call it Fast Sunday, the first Sunday of the month, and similar patterns are found in other religions around the world. Hindus, for example, often fast with each new moon.
Wow, that's interesting. Fasting is really fascinating.
Here are the 10 most beneficial results of periodic fasting.
It clears out and rests your whole physical system.
It focuses your mind. You'll think with new clarity about many different things.
It enhances your gratitude attitude or your ability to feel and express thanks or appreciation, not just for food, but for life at large.
It makes you humbler and more aware of your dependence on nature, on the earth, on God.
It fine-tunes your priorities and makes you more capable of separating the things that really matter from the things that really don't.
Being candid, it can make you feel a little nasty and short-tempered.
Yes. Being candid again, it can make you feel too weak to do anything.
But it calms your mind and slows you down.
It gives you perspective as you think about and plan the month ahead.
And it makes the whole half diet idea seem easier. After fasting, eating half seems like a lovely luxury rather than disciplined deprivation. We love fasting, and we sometimes do it more than once a month.
Not very often.
I don't like to eat much on Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. But it is really interesting when you think about how you feel when you're fasting. When you get past, oh, I'm hungry, but I can't eat. I mean, opening up your mind to what you can do when you don't have food to deal with. Your body doesn't have food to deal with, and your mind doesn't have food. It has more spiritual food, things that you can really think about in depth that you can't when you're just stuffing your body all the time.
Now, we're dealing a lot with this book, The Half Diet Diet. And if you really want to read it all, you can get it. But what we're going to try to do right now is just give you the sort of the executive summary, the 16 principles that it's built on. And then we're going to share with you five really bad habits and five really good habits. And I think that'll pretty well nail it, honey. So here, go ahead.
As you go through this, I think some of you will say, "Oh, I can't do that. Oh man, I could do that, but I don't want to do that." You have to have a need in your mind of, "I do want to eat better. I do want to be more healthy," before you start this list.
Okay, here's the 16 simple principles of this physical eat half diet.
First of all, natural foods in all their variety are good for the body.
Second, appetite, while it can direct us to the food our body needs, does not know when to quit. Your appetite does not know when to quit.
Three, we normally eat about twice as much as we need. I think that's so true, especially of Americans. Wow, we do eat more than we need.
Four, by eating half of that, half as much as usual, and holding the line and doing it consistently, we will gradually gravitate toward food that is twice as good because our body's denied quantity will begin to demand quality.
Number five, by eating half as quickly, we can enjoy food twice as much. This is hard for me because I like to do things quickly.
No, you
And
but
I
you're a
haven't,
perfect guinea pig because you've gotten so good at this.
well, no, I'm still not great at it, but I think I'm always thinking about what's next. I'm not thinking about savoring my food. I'm just thinking, I've got to do this and this and this, and I don't have time to savor this food.
Okay, well, that's why we're working on it, right?
Yep.
Now, as we go on with this list, just listen, because you will feel a ring of truth. Each of these things is true. Number six, the more sensual attention we pay to eating, the more pleasurable it becomes.
Number seven, disciplining both the amount we eat and the pace at which we eat further enhances the pleasure.
Number eight, our bodies need more water as much as they need less food. A stomach that is full of water will ask for and be satisfied with less food.
And that is true. Number nine, allowing the whole digestive system to shut down and rest periodically through fasting can cleanse, rejuvenate, and recalibrate capacity.
Number 10, mental and spiritual awareness are heightened and sharpened by fasting.
And 11, disciplining the output of exercise is as important as regulating the input of eating.
And we're going to shift to exercise next week here on Ayers on the Road. But number 12, with some effort and attention, everyone can find a form of physical exercise that he or she loves. Exercise, because of the endorphins it produces, can become a positive physical addiction.
13, giving away the half we do not eat increases our motivation, even as it feeds our brothers and pleases our divine Father.
Number 14, poetry or other artistic outlets actually enhance awareness, slow us down, orient us to quality, and increase our discipline and make dieting easier.
15, slowing down for proper rest, including regular short naps, can improve overall wellness and productivity. Now, I do have to stop there for a moment because I cannot nap. I cannot nap. I'm glad that you can nap sometimes, but it is really hard for me to nap. So people have to figure out different ways to make that work for their own
Well,
bodies.
we'll get into napping a little later in the month, and by then I'll have you convinced to
Not, no chance.
nap. Final one, the horse and bridle metaphor can help us understand, visualize, and implement the diet. Now, what we want to do to really summarize this and wrap it up is tell you five really bad habits that most of us have or have had at some time in our life, and then flip it on its on its end and suggest five very simple habits that you can adopt if you want to have good habits instead of bad ones. So here are five bad habits that are epidemic in this country.
First of all, chronic dehydration. We don't drink enough, or we drink the wrong things. Sodas and diet sodas don't rehydrate us. Most of us drink less than half of the 8 glasses of water necessary to keep us hydrated. Doctors tell us that most Americans are in the same stage of chronic dehydration, which undermines the health of our organs from our skin to our digestive tract. And I have to say right there, too. Your body can take eight glasses a day. I can only choke down six. If I really try, I think everybody has to adjust, but six is a lot.
Six is a lot. Bad habit number two, fast eating. It's just not fast food that gets us. It's fast eating. The faster we shovel food in, the less well we digest it, and the more we eat. Our bites are too big and too rapid. We tend to guzzle, gulp, and gorge instead of smelling, sipping, and savoring our food.
Number three, huge portions. We live in the land of supersizing. Our drinks are too big. Our entrees are too big. Our plates are too big. Our portions are just too big.
Bad habit number four, endless snacking. The problem is that there's always food around in the cupboard, on the counter, in the fridge, in the gas station, convenience store, in the fast food places we drive past, in vending machines. It's usually high in salt and sugar and low in nutrients. We see it and we eat it.
Number five, too much sitting. 85% of Americans have jobs that are accomplished while sitting, and then we sit in our car on our train or a commute back and forth, and then we sit on the couch and watch TV, and then we sit at our computers and do social media or answer emails. Sit, sit, sit. Not exactly what our bodies were designed to do. Something that really needs to be improved.
Now, I think we all have to admit those habits affect all of us, but let's flip it. What are five really simple things that you could actually do? You could make these your habits, as we are trying to do, with just a focused kind of effort. So here's five habits, very specific, that we'd like you to consider adopting.
The first one, the water habit. Drink a tall glass of water immediately before each of your three meals every day. Besides hydrating you, this fills your stomach and reduces your appetite.
It's just such a simple habit. If we could just do that. Number two, the slow habit. Set your fork or spoon down on the table after each bite. This slows down the eating, causes you to chew your food, to enjoy a meal more while actually consuming less.
And number three, the half habit. Prepare or order whatever meal you want, but eat only half of it. If you're eating out, share your meal with your spouse or friend, or take half of it home. If you're eating at home, eat exactly half of your normal portions.
These are simple habits, but they are powerful. Number four, the snack habit. Only snack on fruit or vegetables. Except for your three meals, do not eat anything unless it's a fruit or
Or chocolate.
a
Have to have a little chocolate every day. We have
vegetable.
to be real about this. The move habit. Devote 20 minutes a day to some kind of aerobic exercise that doubles your normal heart rate. It can be something as simple as a brisk walk or time on a treadmill or a stationary bike, but do it every day. And that is good advice for me, for all of us. And it's easier said than done because you do have to change. Changing habits is the hardest thing to do.
Let me just give you a little proof in case you think we're just going off on some vague ideas here. Here's a wonderful story from an article in New England that says this. Women came in the laboratory for lunch on two separate occasions. Each time the women were offered a huge plate of pasta with tomato vegetable sauce and grated Parmesan cheese, plus a glass of water. They were asked to eat until the point of comfortable fullness. On one occasion, they were instructed to eat it as quickly as they could. On the other occasion, They were just told to eat slowly and put down their spoons between bites. They did not know the food and water were weighed before and after the meal to determine the amount consumed. When eating quickly, the women consumed 646 calories in 9 minutes. When eating more slowly, they had an average of 579 calories in about 29 minutes. They ate 67 more calories in 9 minutes than they did in 29 minutes, said the lead researcher, director of Rhode Island University Energy Metabolism Laboratory. If you add that up over 3 meals a day, that is a big difference in calories. So we just want all of you to consider the way you're eating and how much you're enjoying it. And we want to make you a little promise that if you can eat half as fast, you can enjoy twice as much. And if you can eat half as much, you can feel twice as good.
And with that, we will leave you with lots of ideas to make it fit with your lifestyle and your life, because you always have to adjust to what's going on in your own life, but the principles are really good.
And you can probably tell that we believe a lot in trying to simplify things because we're simple people and we know that simplicity is what gets things done. And next week on Irish on the Road, we're going to shift gears and go from the diet question to the exercise question and try to come up with some equally simple ways for all of us to just do a little better in the exercise category, irrespective of how mobile we are, irrespective of how athletic we are. There are certain principles that can help us to get the exercise we need, and that is huge. It's as big a deal as the diet part.
So I need this as much as anybody right now because I'm exercising this crazy need that's killing me all the time. But it is really important to keep that going, even if it's hard, and it gets easier as it becomes a habit.
So join us next time on Ayers on the Road.
Bye-bye.